So, Rob, why don't you tell us how the Righteous Reprobates got its start?
Well, I guess it was a couple of years ago. I mean, I've been writing songs for, well, since the year dot, really. And I was living in Australia at the time. And I originally from the UK. And I moved back here with a whole bunch of songs. And it was really coming back by myself. And the dream was to kind of form a band around the songs I'd been writing. And I found Charlie, who's our drummer. I found him online. And we just hit it off pretty well. And he had a recording studio where he lived in Kent. So I had all these demos done and I gave them to him. It was about four songs, one of which was actually our new single that's coming out, We Go With What We Know. And it just kind of stemmed from there. And the rest of the band were friends of Charlie's. So Jack Griffiths, who plays guitar, lead guitar, and Jack Collier, who plays bass. And we just started jamming from there and recording songs.
Now we saw the video, We Go With What We Know. It's got a real rock solid sound to it, but it's got the hooks, which is kind of hard to combine if you're a songwriter, I think, anyway. You know, I mean, that heaviness, mm-hmm. but then also, you know, the melody as well. You know, how would you describe your songwriting process with Righteous?
Yeah, I guess I've always been drawn to the guitar. Like when I first got into music, it was always guitar bands, the guitar icons that you really kind of, that is your sound if you're a guitarist. You know, Jimmy Page, Kurt Cobain, Noel Gallagher, they were always the big influences as guitar players for me growing up. And then once I got into songwriting a bit more as I got older, it was always, I realized the importance of a hook or a riff, something that drew someone into a song. And I've always just tried to apply that to whatever I've written, really. That is the formula as far as I'm concerned. It works for me and it's worked in the past for other people. And when you see people respond to a song, it's because it's got something that is a hook. And it's usually that element of simplicity, isn't it? And that's what I highlight. And I mean, for example, the chorus of We Go With What We Know, I mean, it couldn't be any more basic, really, in terms of its simplicity, but it just works because of that.
Yeah, it's got a power to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that awesome combination of guitar and drums that I think do it. I mean, because it's got that thumping power to it. Now, being a guitar player, do you write songs? Like, I don't know how else to say it, because I'm a guitar player myself, so I write songs based on riffs. I'll come up with a riff, and then I'll add around it. Are you kind of like that?
Yeah, very much so. So the riff, you know, it's the spine of the song, isn't it? So there'll be an idea there, whether it's a riff or, you know, it might be a vocal melody as well, but if we're talking guitars, then yeah, certainly a riff, and then I'll just try and build everything around that. And I always try and come up with something quirky. So if it's like a time signature change or a tempo change, just something that's just throwing people off the scent. If you're going to create something that's quite obvious, you always want to, I think, come up with something that's, I didn't see that coming, just to keep the listener interested.
Yeah, kind of like what I call those plot twists. So
yeah, that kind
of thing, definitely. Now, like I said, being a guitar player and being, you know, our audience being primarily musicians, I got to ask the geek question: What kind of gear are you using? I notice you use a lot of Gibsons and stuff. So,
yeah. When I play live, I mean, Gibsons are my favorite guitars. They just feel right to me. They're the guitars I'm most comfortable playing. So, I own a Les Paul and a 335. So that they are my two primary guitars for playing live, for sure. But in the studio, I tend to be a bit more dynamic in the choice of guitars. It just depends on what the song needs. So, you know, we have used Fenders. Jack Griffiths, who plays lead guitar, he uses Gibsons and Fenders predominantly. But it's just about, it depends what you're doing in the studio. It's about building texture, isn't it? So we might track a load of Gibsons down and then layer over some strats just to kind of give the structure, give the dynamic.
Get that Fender bell tone in there.
Baritone.
Or no, bell tone. You notice how you ever notice how the Strat has like a bell tone to it? Or all Fenders do, I think.
Yeah. And the choice of pickup, I mean, it all sort of adds to creating texture.
Yep. Now, I've never, believe it or not, played a hollow body. What's the 335 sound like going through a Marshall?
pretty damn good.
Really?
it's a great sound. Yeah. Wow.
Because I would have thought that maybe it like have a feedback issue or something. But I've never played Hobby Lobby at all.
Yeah, I mean that is the issue with them. Certainly, yeah. Recent rehearsals where I was struggling with that a bit actually with the 335 giving a lot of feedback. But I think on the whole they're nice guitars. They're comfortable to play around the house as well, just because they're kind of like the cross. They are quite acoustic in some ways, aren't they? So it's quite a new guitar for me as well. The 335, the Les Paul was the one I was playing for most of the time with the band.
Now I do have a Les Paul. I have a Les Paul Custom, and I want to know, like, as one Les Paul player to another, how long can you play that guitar on stage before it starts digging into your shoulder?
Yeah, they are quite heavy, aren't they?
Yeah,
but it's because certainly in the last couple of years, Gibson changed the way they made them, didn't they? So they've started boring holes in them, and it's interesting because when you talk to people have been playing Gibsons for years, or the older generations and so on, that are used to the really heavy old school Les Pauls. I know that is an issue. They are really heavy, but a lot of the newer generation ones, that they're not as heavy, are they? For that reason, that they are boring holes in them.
True.
Did you hear about this?
Yeah. Where they start chambering the body.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So mine's quite a modern version. It's only, well, I think it was 2012. I think it was made. So I was told by someone that it has had that treatment to it. Yeah.
See, I've got a 2004 before they started doing it, and it's like carrying a couple bowling balls around my shoulder, man.
Oh, yeah.
So now, what about your amplification? I mean, I noticed you use Marshall cabs.
Yeah, Marshall. On a lot of the recordings. I mean, that's just what we had at the time, as a Marshall. But I really, at the minute, I've got a high watt. 100 watt gain head, that is, yeah, I quite like that. But I think my favorite amp that I've kind of discovered that kind of works best for me is Vox AC30. I just love those with a tube screamer in front of
it. Give it a little more kick to it.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, being a guitar player, what's it like? I mean, what's your process like? Are you one of those conscious tone junkies where you actually tailor the guitar to each song? Because we go with what we know, it's got that dirt to it in the guitars that kind of gives it that extra push. And it made me actually wonder, as a guitar player myself, if that tone was tailored for that song.
I remember, we did it. We double tracked it. So all the guitars were double tracked. I think there's a stack of four. So we did it through a Les Paul. We double tracked a Les Paul, and then we double tracked a Fender Strat. And that was the combination of it. But in terms of tone, I usually use that, leave that to the sound guy. We used a tube screamer. I remember that. And yes, it's this thing of like cranking valve amps, isn't it? Like when you're in a studio environment, you kind of get that luxury of just being able to absolutely, you know, as long as it's a well-sealed studio, just absolutely cranking the hell out of the valves. And I remember we did that on a lot of the tracks, including that one, just to kind of really get that Marshall sound, that old school sound that you get from valve amps. And with the tube screamer, of course, in front of it. But you can't really do that as much on stage if you've got a big stack, just because it depends on the size of the venue. But it's something you just have to give a bit more control over.
Yeah, because you'll get bleed through from the stage and it'll sound weird.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I know what you mean. So it sounds like you're, as far as recording goes, you guys are kind of old school, because you know, and what I mean by that is you don't do a lot of like direct board or reamping or anything like that.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't really play any modern guitars, or I'm not into digital amps or any of that sort of thing. I just, it is that old sound. It does sound better. And like anyone you speak to who's been around for a while, they always say the same thing. It's always vintage gear. And that is where everyone sort of wants to push to anyway, whether it's guitars or recording studios. It's always referencing sort of vinyl or what the valves sound like in something. It's you never really hear people praise digital too much, do you? And I think, yeah, it's people sort of being retro for the sake of it. But I think there is a lot of truth in it. It does sound better.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Cause I went through a period myself where I had a rack set up and then I went right back to pedals, man.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, mainly, what do you play? Well, as far as type of music or.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Guitar. Yeah,
anything but country. so and then I play mostly a mix of Strats and Tellys and Gibsons. Like the Gibsons are all like, I have two Les Pauls, so that's my Gibson collection right there. But
yeah,
my amp is the 5150 head. So
yeah, okay,
yeah, the EVH one, which is a lot more dynamic than you'd think. It's not so much a metal amp as you would think. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a hot rodded Marshall.
Okay. Yeah.
So which it makes sense because Eddie used Marshalls up until, you know, he started coming out with his own amp. So,
yeah,
you know, but, so you're more of you guys are more old school then as far as the recording process. Cause one reason I ask is I am in a constant argument with other guitarists that I know, concerning reamping in particular, and reamping is, you know, for the audience's sake, is where you take the guitar and plug it straight into the board and then you digitally mix in an amp emulator later to make whatever amp sound you want.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I always try and, obviously it sort of depends what the engineer or producer wants to do, but I like to get it right at source. I always think that's the best approach, because then it sort of shows that you're thinking about it and you're conscious of sound and what works, whereas to rely on, you know, what a digital preset might do and all that kind of thing, I think it just takes the magic out of it, and it's kind of more a sign of laziness, really, isn't it, than anything else?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, speaking of engineers, you worked with Sean McGee from Abbey Road. What is that like? I mean, like, that's like a mind-blowing thing just to be in Abbey Road, in my opinion, but to, like, work with one of the Grammy-winning guys there.
It was pretty incredible. I mean, just the wealth of knowledge and, you know, talks about things that, way above my head. But it's not just so much that, it's watching someone like that work, just the way they are around a desk, just how quick they can just make a decision about how something needs to sound and turn the dials accordingly. I mean, it's pretty spectacular to watch. But yeah, Abbey Rose, that was an amazing day out, because we mastered it there with him, and it's like this huge museum, just corridors of old vintage gear everywhere. Yeah, you can. It just feels great being there.
Because that's like being in the Smithsonian of rock. To me, Abbey Road is more the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum is.
Yeah, I mean, it felt great. I mean, it is. You get there, you've got the big white building, and it's actually a lot. It's huge. Once you get inside, it's absolutely huge. But from the road, it just looks like a big house. You know, it's still big, but it just goes on forever when you're in there. And yeah, you get in there, the reception room, there's all these pictures on the wall of Beatles and everyone who's recorded there, right from, you know, the 50s and 60s or whatever, right through to the now. And it's, yeah, and all the old EMI stuff's all laid out. They use a lot of it as well, like the mastering suites are all full of old EMI desks, all the channel strips from them. You know, it's all part of the package of why you go to Abbey Road, so you can run your mixes through all their old gear.
And I heard they're pack rats over there, like all the guys over, like they keep stuff, like you could easily bump into a Hammond organ that Paul McCartney played on, or, you know, or or a Vox that Brian May used.
Yeah, I mean, there were pianos everywhere. Well, there was. Yeah, I remember you'd been in a situation where someone would point to something and say, "Oh, so and so's played that," and I'll look out there. That's so and so. So yeah, you're right. It's definitely like that.
Wow. And then what's it like having like Sean McGee like engineer your stuff? Because that guy has worked with like what, Stone Roses, Blur, Oasis. I mean, it's endless.
Yeah, I mean, just really humble. Just a humble guy who. You to meet him, you wouldn't kind of know that he had done all this stuff unless you asked, but he he just knows his way around his gear, and so, he's got a great set of ears.
So he's not one of those guys that's like, if you want something done one way, he'll pull his Grammy out of his pocket and say, "Well, my friend says it's all right the way it is." So he's not one of those types of guys, is he?
No, not at all, and great in the sense that, you know, it do stuff for you, and then say, you know, if you want changes done or you're not happy with the way something sounds, let me know and I'll fix it straight away. And of course, there wasn't anything wrong because he's Sean McGee.
I know. I mean, on a certain level, it's got to be like when Luke started getting trained by Yoda. I mean, in a way, you know. I mean. Yeah. You kind of just let him like sit on your back and run around the swamp, you know?
Yeah. So I mean, I just enjoy it. You know, it's nice to just let people that have the experience in their particular fields, you know, sound engineers and so on, just run with it. I mean, to bring a song to the table and go, well, this is the song, this is how I think it should go from a production point of view, and then that getting things suggested to you, it's great just watching something grow like that.
Now, when you come in with a song, okay, let's use We Go With What We Know as an example of this. When you hook up with somebody of Sean McGee's caliber and you go into a studio of Abbey Road's caliber, and then you say, here's a demo of what We Go With What We Know sounds like now, does it, you know, and then fast forward to when it's done and it's sent to the factory, get mass produced and up, ready to upload on iTunes and all that, does the song sound totally different from when you first start the process to when it's out there?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, definitely, yeah. So it really does. I mean, you know, you come up with an idea, it's a song, but it's all the little extras that when you compound them together, it's a growth that you only kind of realize just how much it's developed when you're at the end of it and you look back. So like little extra harmonies in places or a delay on a guitar or something that's being added in during the mixing or whatever it might be. Yeah. It's all those things.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because a good engineer, in my opinion, will become the fifth member of the band. You know, I mean, and where his instrument is his or her instrument is the board.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know, so what do you like, you know, I don't know, as best as you could describe it, what would, in your opinion, would be the main three differences, let's say, of We Go With What We Know in the demo phase before you took it to the studio versus when Sean said, you know, let's, you know, this sounds good.
Well, when I first recorded it, I recorded it on an acoustic guitar, and it was just vocals and an acoustic guitar to a click track, and that's what I gave Charlie, the drummer. So the first stage of it that I ever really knew as a song was the way I demoed it on an acoustic guitar to a click track. And then, you know, I mean, I wrote the song on an electric guitar, but it was just for the sake of demoing it so someone could play along to it. That's just the way I did it. But that would have been the first kind of stage of it. And then putting drums down on it, that was quite a significant thing because, I mean, I'm not a drummer, but I had quite a solid idea of how I wanted the drums to go. It actually took us a couple of attempts to get the drums right for that track. So that was particularly good. Once the drums were actually done and I was satisfied with that, all of a sudden it was one of those songs that needed drums on it to really glue it together. And then once that happened, it's electric guitars out, double tracking them, stacking them up, and the song was there as far as I was concerned. And then I guess the final stage where I really knew it was solid was some of the additional harmonies on the chorus that just kind of went, yeah, that's now a pop song. And I like that.
Nice. Now, would you consider it the end product, you know, different than what you originally envisioned, like much so or little so or maybe so?
I'd say, yeah, quite a lot, really. Yeah, looking back on it. It's the combination of building a team around you, and you have your ideas, and then it's the experience and the wealth of experience from all the people that you've built around you, whether it be producers, drummers, or the various people that are in your band and so on.
Yeah.
It's all that.
Exactly.
I mean, you can write a song, but it's the way other people are interpreting it as well, and hearing things that you're not necessarily hearing.
Well, and the reason I want to highlight this with this song is because this song has a labor of love sound to it. Like it's got the anthemic, chorus, you know, it's got the groove that you just can't get out of your head. And it's got the riff that is obviously built around, but I mean, it's almost like a documentation of the creative process, for lack of a better term, if that makes sense. And that's why I wanted to highlight that with this song, because this song is a perfect example of the songwriting process.
Wow, thank you very much. That's really kind of you to say.
Well, thank you for letting us share it. Now, with all that being said, you know, what does the rest of the upcoming album sound like?
It's very, very much in the vein of what you mentioned about it is anthemic, because that's always the way I've tried to write, and it's just the way things sound to me. Like, I mean, I was fine with songwriting. The people you grow up listening to, the bands and artists you grow up listening to, are the ones that generally shape you the most. And for me, it was things like Oasis, Nirvana, the Beatles. It was all that sort of stuff. And all that stuff is anthemic. And I don't really think there's too much of it going on anymore in that kind of blatant sense. So that is how I write. So a lot of the record sounds like that. But there's also a lot of diversity in it as well. Like, you've got things like Go With What We Know, which are just quirky 3.5 minute anthemic Britpop songs, if you want. And then there's other stuff on there that's a bit more lightweight. Some really nice ballads on there.
So what you're saying, it was hard as hell to write.
Yeah, okay.
No, because I mean to do one song like of that caliber is okay, that's good, but like what, 8 to 10? I mean, that's a chore, man.
I'd like to think there's 10 songs of that caliber on there.
Now if you could pick 3 songs off that album, you know, like I said, I've only heard We Go With What We Know so far, but it makes me want to hear the rest of it. But you've obviously heard the whole thing. So if you could pick 3 songs that best represent Righteous Reprobates, what would it be and what would they be and why?
Well, this one, because it's really anthemic in a very charming sort of British way, I think. And it was one of the first songs I wrote where I thought, shit, that's good. So that one, and there's a song called Shy Away that is, people seem to always tell me is pretty good. So I'd pick that one. It's really heavy, or one of the heaviest songs, and it's quite fast as well. And it's quite an angry song, I guess, in some ways. So, and it was one of the first songs I ever wrote. So I kind of like the fact that something I wrote so long ago, I felt was good enough to put onto it. A record that is coming out much later.
That song probably evolved just like we were talking about earlier with We Go With What We Know too then.
Yeah. And if I had to pick a third one, it's tricky. Which one? It'd probably have to be one of the soft... Actually, no, it'd be a song called Violent Dreams, because that is that's another one that's in the same sort of vein. It's anthemic, but it's a lot softer. And it's just a really delicate kind of love song, I guess. And it's kind of got a lot of influences that came later on for me as a writer. Like, I got really into a guy called Townes Van Zandt from America, and I was really into him as a songwriter, and I just tried to apply a lot of what I thought his way of writing was to that particular song. So yeah, those three.
Nice. Now, we know the single We Go With What We Know is coming out April 15th, which is tax day here in the US, which kind of has a sinister connotation to the title now. But, you know, especially concerning write-offs. But when does the album come out?
Well, we haven't got a release date for it yet. I mean, the great thing is it's there already. But we're a new band, so we're just trying to build up the following, really, and say hello to the world and get somewhere with it. That's why we're kind of releasing singles and so on, and using them to promote us to get gigs and well, other parts of the world, like America, like you guys say. But this year for sure. Yeah,
nice. Now, do you have a title for the album yet?
Well, funny enough, we were talking about this the other day. We were thinking of calling it What We Know. So if the single was called We Go With What We Know, we'd call the album What We Know. But for the reason that it was just kind of the first one, and when you're doing something that is the first time you've done something like making an album, it's all stuff that you're making decisions by yourself, aren't you? And you're just going with what you know, really. It's not like you've got anyone dictating to you, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. You're just winging it. Sometimes you make mistakes and they lead you to certain decisions that you go, well, that's a good one. That was the wrong one. So maybe that, we'll see.
Oh, please tell me if you call the album that there's got to be a song in there called You Don't Know Shit. that would be a seller, right? Just that, you know.
because
then that would be like a triple threat there.
Yeah, I'll bear that in mind. I'll make a note of that.
Exactly. Make it a breakup song. That makes sense. You know.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys have coming up? Are you guys coming over here to the States or what?
Wow, I mean, yeah, we'd love to. I mean, we're not at the minute, but it would be great to be in a position to one day go over there. Absolutely love to play there. Yeah, definitely. But the next thing, hopefully, yet to be confirmed, but we might have a gig on the 7th. I think that's the next one coming up, the 7th of April in London. So fingers crossed, and anyone who's interested, follow us on social media, Facebook and the likes of, and that's where we post all our news.
Nice. And then we can find, you've got your own website too, righteousreprobates.com.
That's correct. Yep.
So I've got to ask too, how did you get the name Righteous Reprobates?
Yeah. It's funny, like coming up with a band name's the hardest thing I found. It's one thing writing songs, but coming up with that band name, that was hard. And it was, I kind of thought, like, if you think of all the things that you like in music, all the artists, I mean, for me, like the people I was mentioning, Sex Pistols, Nirvana, Oasis, or Rage Against the Machine, all those sort of things, it's what do they all have in common as artists and musicians and identities and so on, and it's that they are all righteous reprobates, aren't they? Like Sex Pistols, they are, if you're raging against the machine, then you are a righteous reprobate, aren't you? So I just thought it was a good name, so went with that.
It's a great name. It's got a ring to it. So, yeah. And yeah. You know, band names are hard to come by, I think.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we you know what's funny? We had a band submit their stuff from California a while ago called the Joe Jackson Whoop-Ass Experience.
Yeah, like,
so, I mean, yeah, that'd look catchy on a poster.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it kind of makes you wonder what they sound like, though. But
yeah, well, yeah, entices you to go and check them out, I guess.
Exactly. Well, there's another one called Hitler Youth Gone Wild. I don't know about that one, but
Righty.
So yeah, that might be special parties there. So
yeah.
But well, where can we find Righteous Reprobates online? I know you've got the website, righteousreprobates.com, and I'm assuming you're on Facebook and Twitter.
Facebook, Twitter. So Facebook is just Righteous Reprobates. Twitter, we're called Reprobates Rock. That's the Twitter name. And where else? So, yeah, I mean, you can check us out on, and we've got another song called My Psychosis that we released late last year. That's on YouTube and SoundCloud and what's the other one? The other streaming site.
Spotify.
That's the one.